Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today I have Chava Willick-Levy. And let me first say hello. How are you, Chava? How's everything? Okay?
I am, thank God, fine. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much. And I know that in the Jewish Action, probably some people have already read the excerpts from your book, A Life Notwithstanding.
Correct. Five
and,
words.
One, two, three, four, five. You are absolutely right. Five words. And it's always hard to pick a good title for a book is probably one of the hardest things to do. So, I mean, I know what the book's about, but probably some of the other people don't. So why is this such an appropriate name for your book?
Well, first of all, I don't even know how the title came to me. I can only consider it providential, just sort of came as a gift from God. I don't know how else to explain it. But I've always been into words, and it hit me suddenly that the word notwithstanding means in spite of, and,
Okay.
And so that if one were to say, for example, about me, a person who gets around in a motorized wheelchair, oh, she's had a pretty good life, her disability notwithstanding, it would mean that the disability is some horrible tragedy, and, oh, in spite of that, you know, she's found some, you know, meaning or joy in her life, which is the very opposite of what my book is about. My book is about literally having a life while not standing, you know, or to play on the word, a life not withstanding.
And you certainly have had a fascinating, interesting life. You have a full life, a tremendous. I mean, you're a writer, you're a speaker, you're a motivational speaker. You're well known. You get around every place, and you're happily married. You have children, right? And
yes, thank God. I have two wonderful children and a wonderful son-in-law and Bli Ayin Hara, a delicious granddaughter.
Oh, wonderful. I didn't know. Well, that's really, really nice. I mean, because everybody knows, and you, Chava Willick-Levy, so, of course, the Willick name is well-known through so many years, and especially through both. You have two brothers, right? Or how many brothers
Correct.
Do you have?
Correct, I do. I have two brothers, Mordechai and David.
Right.
And I have a sister, Temi, who lives in Israel. And, it's funny. My book, of course, has lots of memories and anecdotes about growing up with my siblings. And it occurred to me after the fact that, you know, some people would say, who cares what Chava Willick-Levy has to say? I want to find out what it has to say about Rabbi Mordechai Willick or, you know, something like that. But,
right. Well, sure. Anyway. I'd like to find out some personal things about how you grew up. And you grew up in Kew Gardens Hills, right?
Yes. Originally in Brooklyn. And then we moved to Kew Gardens Hills when I was 6 years old. And thank God we had a very happy home. And, my siblings just were always full of, laughter and, just a lot of fun. It was a great, great family. Thank God. Lots of guests, lots and lots of music.
Now, did you, when you grew up, were you treated differently by your siblings? And, did they treat you different than everyone else or not?
No. And by the way, I just realized that I guess I didn't really say just by way of introduction, because I realized there are people listening to this program who don't know me yet. So I really should explain that in addition to all the things you said about me, which were very kind, that I'm a writer and an editor and a motivational speaker, but in addition to that, I'm a polio survivor, and I get around in a motorized wheelchair. I just realized suddenly that I don't think we said that. In any case, so getting back to your question, my family really did not treat me differently. There was certainly not a shred of sighing or, you know, that kind of Nebuch message that sometimes one can detect out there in the world at large. But in my home, that it was really completely absent.
Uh-huh. Which is good, I guess. And that you would, I guess, you would recommend that to anybody who has it.
Absolutely, I think, you know, my thing about disability—not that I chose it or would have wanted it if I had a choice—but but to me, it's interesting. It's an interesting thing, and sometimes people will approach me. Maybe I'll be giving a speech somewhere, and people will approach me and they'll say something like, you know, I just wanted to mention to you, I have a grandson, you know, and they'll say, you know, a special grandson. And of course, the word special is for me,
right,
you know, anathema. I just really have a problem with it. But I'll realize what they're saying, of course, with the word special is that they have a grandson, you know, with some kind of a disability. And, you know, my response is always, oh, really? You know, that's so interesting. Tell me about him. And maybe they'll say, oh, you know, he has Down syndrome. And I'll say, oh, yeah, tell me what, you know, what's he like? What, you know, what kinds of things interest him? And what I'm really trying to do, I'm genuinely interested, but I'm trying to impart the notion that a person's disability is one piece of who they are. It's an important piece, but by no means is it the most important piece. And that's, I guess, a large reason for the book. I really wanted people to get a three-dimensional picture of my life in a way that would shatter stereotypes, and hopefully, by extension, might shatter stereotypes that people might have about other people who have disabilities.
So the book actually covers from the very beginning. And you were, how old were you when you had polio and you were 4 or 5 years old? How old were you at the time?
I was three.
Three.
Yeah. Wow. And Jonas Salk announced that his vaccine worked on April 12th. Give me a minute. Yeah, that's right. It was the 10th anniversary of FDR's passing. That's why it took me a minute to remember. April 12th, 1955, they announced that the vaccine worked. And on August 13th, 1955, I contracted polio. So it was like basically 4 months later. They did not distribute the vaccine fast enough. And so I'm one of the younger, sort of like last of the Mohicans, I guess you could say, younger polio survivors.
Hmm. Yeah, listen, you know, I think people today, most of the people who are going to be listening to the program don't remember. You know, I do, of course, as a young boy. I remember going to school, and I remember actually getting the vaccine. I remember they taking all of us in school, in elementary school, and going to the basement in Crown Heights Yeshiva, where I lived in Crown Heights, and taking us and giving us the shot, the polio vaccine. So, yeah, people don't understand the devastation it had, and it played upon families, and obviously, you know, it was a great thing when it was really discovered.
Yeah.
So you grow up as a young little girl who has a disability, and I mean, of course, I know you've really overcome so much adversity in your life, and you do it with a smile. So how do you do that?
Well, thank you for the compliment. I guess that one thing that really has helped me and has been an anchor for me is hanging on to the notion that if I'm going to be victimized by anything at all, and if I am victimized by anything at all, it's by a prejudiced society. I don't consider myself victimized by polio. In fact, you know that sometimes they'll say, oh, a polio victim. You might hear that phrase, you know, polio
Sure.
victim.
Right.
But I'm very medoctic, you know, very careful to say that I'm a polio survivor. And again, that the victimization, if it's there at all, is from a prejudiced society. I guess that's something that I picked up probably, again, from my family, where certainly there was no message of, you know, growing up, no message of being a victim. And I have a lot of other things that are, you know, I guess you could call them strong opinions. And if you want, I can share some of them.
Sure. I'd like to hear them. Let's hear your strongest one.
My strong opinions. Well, I feel strongly that people with disabilities are neither patients to be cured or children to be taken care of or, heaven forbid, brave souls to be admired. You know, all of those things are anathema to me. And I guess lastly, if I were to sum up my philosophy of life in two words, those two words would be independent dependence, by which I mean that people with disabilities should be in charge of the assistance that they might require. In other words, they should be free to be independently dependent. I, for example, am extremely dependent. My arms are the weakest part of my body. I can't bathe myself. I can't get dressed by myself. There's just lots and lots and lots of things that I can't do. But I am very much in charge of the help that I need. And now that I've just learned today that you're a neighbor, you live here in the Five Towns in Woodmere, and what that means is that we're going to have you over for a Shabbos meal because I make, if I may say so, a mean chalent.
Really?
And okay. Yes, but the point is, do I dice the onions? No, I absolutely don't, et cetera, et cetera. But it's my recipe, and it's a unique recipe. I might add, people usually ask for thirds, and
so you're like the CEO.
What I'm getting at is that I'm, you know, again, that even though I'm not the one dicing the onions, I'm right there in the kitchen, and the person helping me is my co-pilot, but I'm the one who's deciding what spices to use.
Right, so you're in charge, and with the things that you can't do, you have somebody help you, but it's still you, and it's got your signature all over it, which is really great. So when you're growing up now, I guess,
right.
Were the teenage years, were they more difficult than other years? Because teenagers in general have difficult times. So.
Yeah, I have to admit that maybe thankfully. My realization that that the world out there had different ideas about what my future would be than I did, that realization came sort of late. It was my junior year of college, so I was about 20 years old, and I was in Israel. And some of the people in, you know, studying with me were starting to date, and I asked one of my friends if she could ask the person she was dating if he might know someone for me, and she said, "I don't think you're being realistic," and so it was a very shattering discovery for me. I had absolutely no clue until then that what I expected from my life differed from what other people thought would be my future.
Wow, unbelievable. So how did you deal with it?
Well, I have to admit, I railed against the injustice of it for quite some time. I have to say that, looking at it now, I think I'm much more in touch now with the idea that we believe, you know, in in Judaism that everything, even if it seems painful, that everything is Latova, everything is from Hashem. I don't think that was a part of my consciousness at the time. So, you know, I don't think I, the idea also, I don't know if you, there's a beautiful pasuk in Tehillim, which now means a great deal to me. Hashlech al Hashem Yahavacha, v'hu yachal kalecha, you know, cast off your burden onto Hashem, and he'll sustain you. I don't think when I was 20 that I looked to Hashem as much as I could have, maybe should have. So back then, I think I was much more if coping, if you will, by railing, you know, by being angry. But I guess with time, I realized that, you know, you can't change the world by railing. And I think I just you know, decided to try to get more involved in other aspects of my life that I could control, you know, academic things and work things. And davening became more important as I got closer to, you know, closer to 30, and I was still single. And, you know, ultimately, Hashem, thank God, answered my prayers.
How did that happen, by the way? I mean, like, how did you meet your husband?
Well, it's funny, you know, people ask that all the time. And, of course, that's kind of, you know, a major part of the book. But I want you to know that when people ask that at the Shabbos table, when, you know, if we have guests, our kids, you know, growing up, I think they had a competition, like, who could tell that story in less time? Because they knew that if I would try to tell it, or my husband, it would end up taking easily 15 minutes. I guess if it's all right, maybe I'll just try to give a little bit of a hint.
We don't have that much time. So how about giving us the elevator speech, how you met
right.
your husband?
Well, all I'll say, if it's all right with you, is that
sure.
something bad, quote unquote, happened that at the time that it happened, it looked sort of like God was out to lunch. But because of this incident, something that happened, because of it, I ended up meeting my husband. Like, I was able to look back at that incident 10 months later, realizing that if that had not happened, then the steps leading me to my husband would not have happened. And it's really, thank God, it's a beautiful story, and I think it's a pleasure for me to be able to give people chizuk, you know, to give people strength to realize that we may not realize it right away, but literally some things happen that are miracles in the making if we just give it a little time. Forgive me if I didn't answer.
No, it's okay. First of all, I think people should, you know, read the book itself and then let them kind of understand where it is. Now, do you speak a lot about the book? Or when you speak, I know you speak a lot. I've seen your name out. So do you normally, are you like a motivational speaker, or you talk about your life, encouragement for people? Is that the basic thing?
No.
Okay.
I speak on a number of subjects, and almost all of my speeches are peppered with autobiographical, vignettes, stories in my life. But it's there to illustrate certain points. In other words, I certainly feel strongly, this is again just me, that doesn't speak to anyone else who speaks, who has a disability. But speaking for myself, I most certainly do not want to have, like, oh, here's Chava Willick Levy. She is going to now tell you about her disability and what happened to her and you know, how she, no, it's Chava Willig Levy is here, and she's going to be talking about Gamzu L'Tova or Chesed or Tefillah, you know, davening, prayer, and peppered in, you know, this talk will be peppered with, you know, anecdotes from her own life. But it's also going to be peppered with ideas, you know, quoting perhaps Rambam or quoting, you know, the Ramchal. It's to me, it's very important that I'm not just out there like a dog and pony show, you know, like people, like a little bit of voyeurism for the audience, you know. No, I'm not into
that. No, I understand that. Now, how would people, let me just ask you this, Chava, let me ask you this question, Chava. So how would people get in touch with you? I mean, I don't see it in the, I mean, the article may have it, but the people who are listening, if they want to, you know, maybe they're looking for a motivational speaker, maybe they're looking for somebody who they could invite. People are always looking for somebody interesting. So how do they, what's your email address?
Well, I guess the easiest one is c613@verizon.net.
c613@verizon.net. It sounds great. You know, I wish I could have more time, but, you know, I usually limit my program to 20 minutes. We actually went 21 minutes. But
oh,
for
my
you,
goodness.
But for you, anything is possible. So, listen, I appreciate it, and I would have strongly advised people, if you're reading the article in the Jewish Action, now you've had a chance to really listen to Chava, an incredible person. If you have not, and you're just kind of listening and say there's a book, A Life Notwithstanding. Five words, A Life Notwithstanding. I'm looking forward to reading it myself. And thank you so much for coming on the program. And best of luck to you. Okay? Be well.
My pleasure. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.